Labor and Commerce will now come to order. It's 3:35 on July 23rd. With us today, we've got Representative Gardner, Representative Book, Representative Ledoux, Representative Gatto, and myself, Chair Olson. Anybody has a BlackBerry on, because they please turn them off. I know this room is particularly sensitive. Today, we will hear, continue hearing House Bill 4004, suspending the motor fuel tax. We've got Randy Roro from the administration and Conrad Jackson from my staff. I guess we'll let Randy do it. Welcome to Labor and Commerce, and please state your name and affiliation for the record. And the floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Randy Ruaro, R-U-A-R-O. I am a special assistant for the governor carrying the bill. Thank you to the chair and the committee for taking time today. I'll be very brief. I just want to point out that in addition to ordinary Alaskans who would save significant amounts from the suspension, there are five groups of our economy that would also particularly benefit. That's Alaskan commercial fishermen, that's Alaskan charter fishermen, that's Alaskan regional air carriers, and it's Alaskans in general who would benefit from lower barge and air costs. That's all I have, Mr. Chairman.
Is there anybody in the room that would care to testify on this bill?
Question for Mr.
Roro. Oh, sure.
Which?
Thank you, Mr. Roro. Thank you for your testimony. On the letter that is dated July 21st, signed by you, the third paragraph says a large processor using tender vessels to transport fish and buying 500,000 gallons of diesel fuel a year would save roughly $25,000. How many such tender vessels in Alaskan waters are owned by Alaskans?
Through the chair, Representative Gardner, I don't know the ownership numbers, but I think the principle that I was trying to get to in the letter was that the savings would be available to be passed on to the I think largely Alaskan fishermen who are catching the fish. Often there's negotiations that go on between the catcher vessels and the processor vessels, and so the savings, even if they went to a company that was owned by non-residents or partially owned by non-residents, would be available to be passed on to the Alaskan fishermen. I do know that oftentimes the negotiations between the commercial fishermen and the processors can come down to as little a margin as half a cent or a penny, because they deal in such large quantities of fish bought and sold that even a savings of 8 cents a pound or 8 cents passed on to the fishermen is significant.
And follow up, Mr. Chair. So you're confident that this savings would be actually a benefit to local fishermen and not to the vessel owner?
Through the chair, Representative Gardner, I think it would be a benefit to both. But certainly the resident commercial fishermen would know the tax had been suspended and would be able to factor that into their negotiations of terms with the processors.
Thank you.
During our meeting of July 11th, we had a couple of issues raised, one by Representative Ledoux and one by Representative Ramirez. And I believe in the packet we have a response from Ledge Legal addressing those two issues, one of which was related to antitrust, and the other one was whether or not we jeopardize highway funds. But there's a response in the packet. Any other questions from the committee for Representative Gatto?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is the tax 8 cents or exactly eight, or is it different?
Through the chair, Representative Gatto, on motor fuel gasoline for cars, it's 8 cents even.
Okay. And diesel, 8 cents? And then marine fuel.
Through the chair, Representative Gatto, I believe that marine fuel diesel is 5 cents.
Well, we'll open it up to public testimony. Is there anybody in the room that would care to testify on this bill? Seeing none, we'll go off-site to Michael Wallery in Fairbanks. Are you with us, Michael?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yes. Could you please state your name and affiliation for the record, and thank you for taking the time to call in.
I appreciate the opportunity to testify. My name is Michael Walry. I'm general counsel for Tanana Chiefs Conference, and I'm here to testify on behalf of Tanana Chiefs Conference with regards to this bill. Tanana Chiefs Conference generally supports the idea behind the bill, but has two serious reservations about the bill, and we would request the committee to make amendments to address those two concerns. At the current time, the bill does not ensure that the reduction of taxes will necessarily be passed on to the end user. And if the bill is to be meaningful in terms of addressing high energy costs to the actual consumer public, the savings must be passed on to the consumer. And I'm sure we're all aware of past fuel abatement programs where the result has been that the actual tax savings has not been passed on to the consumer. At the current time, TCC is developing a discounted fuel program to assist our member villages in achieving discounts on through bulk fuel purchase prices. And under our program, the vendors will be basically agree to pass on the discounts to the consumers, so that we can assure that our activities actually result in a reduction in fuel prices that has plagued similar programs and actually undermined the benefit of such programs in other states. So we would recommend that the bill be amended to make a provision that retailers pass on the tax savings to consumers. The bill provides for a substantial amount of reporting requirements that should make this fairly easy to do. And the second concern that we have has to do with the reporting requirements and some ambiguities in the bill talking about sales invoices that must be attached to the report. It's not exactly clear what those sales invoices would entail to a rural operation, and might be beyond the capability of many rural vendors to actually comply with heavy reporting requirements. And what we would suggest is that the commissioner be given appropriate flexibility to adopt regulations that would allow the filing of reports that summarize sales to assure compliance with our other suggestion, which is to assure that actual consumers receive the benefit in the end pricing. And if there are any other questions, be free to respond if you have any.
No, actually, I'm going to ask Randy to come back up to the table and respond to that. But we also have an amendment that's going to address some of your concerns that's going to be read across shortly. But
to the chairman, the previous speaker is correct. There is no language in the bill that would guarantee in law that the benefit be passed on. But what there is without that is a competitive market that Mr. Sniffen of the Department of Law, who works in consumer affairs, has advised that, in his opinion, the significant amount of the savings would be passed on. There was a 6-month suspension of a gas tax in Indiana and Illinois in 2000, and a study of that effects of that by MIT found that 60% to 80% of the tax savings were passed on. So we feel that just with a competitive market, you're going to get a significant amount of pass-through. In addition to that, we've worked up an amendment that tries to add some additional teeth to ensure that the savings are passed through.
Yeah, thank you, Randy. Representative Gardner.
Mr. Chair, having the amendment being brought up, I have a couple of questions about that. Could I ask them now, or do you want to wait until the amendment is actually offered?
Would you like to offer the amendment?
No.
No. Representative Ledoux, would you like to offer?
Sure. I offer amendment number one.
It'll be noted that 25-GH40660/A is amendment number one. Would you like to discuss amendment number one, Representative Gardner?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, I have a question, and that is that this deals with the motor fuel, which is 8 cents a gallon, but the bill actually applies also to aviation fuel and boat fuel. So is there any thought of doing something comparable? And along those same veins, it seems to me that one of the places where consumers notice fuel tax increases is the surcharges on airline tickets. And is there any reason to believe that those would be discontinued or reduced for Alaskan travelers?
Through the chair, Representative Gardner, the airline industry is one of the industries that benefit significantly from the bill because they purchase large amounts of aviation jet fuel in Anchorage usually, and that tax would be suspended. So they would have the ability to pass on some savings to consumers. I apologize. I missed the first part of your question.
Oh, whether the signs require, whether the requirement to have signs notifying consumers of the suspension of the tax would also apply to boat fuel docks and airline counters, I guess.
Through the chair, Representative Gardner, I believe that the definition of motor fuels includes all the different subtypes of fuels that you described and that it would apply. But if Mr. Sniffen is online, he was actually the drafter of the amendment and can speak to it.
We still have Mr. Wallery online, and I'd like to apologize to you. We've been in committee since about 8 o'clock this morning, and we're running on about half full. I wonder if you have any additional comments, Mr. Wallery?
Yes. First of all, as I think the committee probably knows, the Illinois study, there were other studies that suggested that in the Illinois situation, the consumer benefit was actually less than the 60% that is referenced in the MIT study. The second point is that relying solely on the invisible hand of Adam Smith to ensure competition makes a certain amount of sense in Chicago, but it makes a much greater difference in Shagalak. And we need to, I think the dynamics, the economic dynamics in rural Alaska need to be factored in that in most communities, there is only one vendor. And so the idea that competition in a community is going to assure that these savings are passed on assumes erroneously that in rural Alaska there is competition at the vendor level, and that's just simply not the case. That is why Tanana Chiefs Conference feels very strongly that in regulation that there needs to, that we cannot rely upon competition that exists only in theory, and that we must make sure that a gas savings of this particular nature be actually visited upon and benefit the consumers. Otherwise, it does very, very little as a practical matter where there is no competition to rely upon competition to provide that benefit.
Representative Ledoux.
Well, I just wanted to make sure when Representative Gardner was asking her question whether we're going to see it at the customer service counter of Alaska Airlines. Alaska Airlines or any other airline would be considered the consumer when they buy the gas. They wouldn't be required pursuant to this bill, as I understand it, to pass on the savings to the airline passenger. Am I correct about that?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, you are correct in the sense that Alaska Airlines is not a fuel retailer. They're, you know, using fuel in the service they provide, but they're not a retailer. So you are correct that they would not be bound by the amendment to certify they passed on the savings, but they would have the ability and room to do that if, you know, they agreed to do that, but it's not guaranteed.
And there we would be relying, because there is a lot of competition in the airline industry with respect to, as the speaker, Mr. Wallery, was talking about, the Adam Smith concept of the invisible hand in the free market system.
Through the chair, that's correct.
Thank you.
Thanks again, Mr. Wallery. Is there anybody else online that would care to testify? Seeing none, we do have two people from the administration, question only, Ed Sniffen, and from the Department of Law, and Joanna Bales. Any of the committee members would care to address those two people?
I would.
And who would you like to talk to?
Both at the same time.
Okay. You have the floor.
This is Representative Gatto. Just curious, aviation fuel, especially jet fuel, when an airline purchases 50,000 gallons in Anchorage and then proceeds to burn it everywhere else, maybe a small percentage in Anchorage, we're giving them a forgiveness on fuel burned a great many other places. And we're not giving them anything on the fuel they purchased somewhere else and are burning here. Is that question meaningful, or is it just too complex and it ought to be ignored?
For the record, this is Joanna Bales with the Department of Revenue Tax Division. I'm the Deputy Director, and through the Chair, Representative Gatto, I'll take a stab at your question. Basically, the way that it works for airlines is we look at where, and this happens all across the nation, instead of doing an allocation method, we look at where the purchase is of the fuel and where the purchase is, that state keeps the fuel tax. So it would be no different than, say, fuel purchased in Washington. It obviously is not burned entirely in Washington, and of course Alaska doesn't get any of that tax. But when we sell it here, we do keep all of the tax for fuel that's burned partially here but then burned elsewhere. So it's not specific allocation, and you would be correct that then providing, you know, a tax suspension doesn't, I mean, all that fuel would not be burned within the state of Alaska. But I think Mr. Raro's point is that providing that reduction in cost of fuel that they purchase here, I mean, it is a business that operates here in Alaska with lots of employees in the state, and hopefully we would see some sort of benefit not only to the business but to consumers. So I hope I've answered your question.
Thank you. Representative Gardner, followed by Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Bales, of the approximately $40 million fiscal note on this bill, can you give us a breakdown about of which types of fuel? And I'm interested, say, roughly in gasoline, I guess, for fuel that's used for vehicles, for fishing boats, and for airlines or air fuel?
Yes, Representative Gardner, through the chair. In fiscal year 2007, the breakout of approximately $40 million, $29 million of that was collected for fuel used on the highways at the 8-cent rate, $5.5 million for marine fuel, which is taxed at 5 cents, jet fuel, which is used in the large air passenger jets and just the large jets, $4.1 million, and that tax rate is 3.2 cents a gallon. And then we have another rate of 4.7 cents on aviation gasoline, and that type of gasoline is used in the smaller like Cessnas and things like that that you see out at Merrill Field, and that was $685,000 that we collected for that. So the bulk of it is, three-quarters of what we collect, the $29 million, is in highway use.
Thank you.
I'd like the record to reflect we've been joined by Representative Newman. And Representative Newman, you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess first we'll go to Mr. Raro. Mr. Raro, I had talked to you, well, actually both you and both Joanna, about different ways that we can implement this. and maybe extend it. So when we're looking at the amendment here where it says talking about the periods of when it would start and stop, and what we had talked about, and you were going to try and work up some numbers for me and to see if they work, and if we got it now, that's fine. If not, I don't know what we'll do. Maybe do it on the floor in the next committee. But if the ANS West Coast price, excuse me, Mr. Chair, Alaska North Slope West Coast price was at a certain rate, say at $120 for a time period that would be averaged for 1 month, beginning at the month and ending at the end of the month, that the tax would be 4 cents if it was at $120. And it would be progressive like that, depending on the amount of money that the state was getting due to the ANS West Coast price of oil. And also that we would include in that to account for inflation, a rate of 4% increase per year to account for that. Have you been able to do any of that work?
Through the chair, Representative Newman, I've spoken to Mr. Pogue about the concept and in terms of possibly drafting up some language. As long as Ms. Bales is on the line, perhaps she could speak to whether what you describe is administratively feasible for the Department of Revenue. To answer your question, what I've done so far is just been able to talk to Mr. Pogue about the concept.
Ms. Bales?
Yes, Representative Newman, through the chair. We did discuss that. I remember that discussion, and I think one of the things that came up there is not only would that be administratively burdensome for us here at the Department of Revenue, but even for the taxpayer. And the concern that we have with that concept deals with inventories, specifically at the retail level. So if you've just accepted a load of fuel and the tax rate, let's say, was 8 cents, and then the cost of a barrel of oil went up, and a week later or 2 weeks later you receive a load of fuel and you haven't extinguished the fuel that you previously purchased, and now you're looking at, say, a 2 cent rate, I think it would be extremely difficult for specifically the retailers to separate that. And I think under that scenario, the chances of having the tax savings passed on to the consumer would be greatly reduced, just because it would be difficult for the retailer to make the determination of what they did and didn't sell and at what rate. So that's my biggest concern. For us, it would be difficult as well, but I think probably more difficult on the retailer and the distributor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, if I may.
Follow up?
Thank you, Ms. Bales. And Joanna, if we can kind of just continue that discussion, I'd appreciate that, and keep an open mind on that and work with the administration. And I think that I'm looking for a way to provide this benefit longer term than just a one-year deal. And progressively with what the taxes do. Randy, Mr. Ruraro, what is the fiscal note? I see $34,000 or $36,000 here for doing all these bumper stickers, I guess, or posting a sign on every pump within the state of Alaska. What's a fiscal note on something like that?
To the chair, I'm probably not the best person to answer that question. It's probably Mr. Sniffen, I think, who's online, or Ms. Bales. Apologize.
The only reason I ask is because I've recently inquired what bumper stickers cost, and they're kind of expensive, and we got a lot of gas pumps in this state.
That's true.
And I think that if it's for the only purpose is to make it so, and I don't know, maybe the reason is to try and make sure that we address the concerns by this committee to make sure that 8 cents gets passed on. So I don't know, maybe if we can talk to that, or Mr. Sniffen can talk to that, or
probably
or
Mr.
Can,
Sniffen.
Mr. Sniffen?
Yes, Chairman.
Welcome to Labor and Commerce. Could you comment on the amendment number one or the bill or both?
I can. For the record, this is Ed Sniffen with the Department of Law in Anchorage with the Consumer Protection Unit. With respect to Representative Newman's question about the fiscal note for the stickers on the pumps, that's an excellent question, and I don't know if the bill contemplates that that cost would be absorbed by the retail stations or if the state would actually undertake the task of preparing these stickers and sending them out to all of the retailers. The bill is silent on that, and that's something that we can discuss further. But I was the original author of this amendment. It's been tweaked a little bit by some others, and the intent of the pump sticker language was to come up with some way of at least pressuring retail gasoline station owners to pass on the 8-cent tax savings to consumers. This is the approach that was taken by Illinois, and I think the study had been referenced earlier by one of the prior speakers and by Mr. Barraro. They put these stickers on pumps, and after a six-month gas tax moratorium, they found that there was a 60% to 80% pass-through. I don't know if in Alaska that would be the case. There is certainly some truth to the statement that in rural Alaska, where there is little or no competition, you can't really rely on competitive forces to make retail station owners do anything. But that's the case currently. I mean, in those monopolistic markets, those station owners can charge what they pretty much want, and there's not much we can really do about that unless you want to get in the business of regulating gasoline sales. But this amendment would at least put some pressure on gas station owners to make a statement to the public that they have passed on the tax savings to the consumer. And if they were untruthful about that, they would be subject to all kinds of potential litigation through class action suits, or even from our office. And failure to post the sign would also be a violation of our Consumer Protection Act, which would give us the authority to do some investigative work to make sure that the savings were genuine. They, you know, didn't claim to pass on the savings and then just pump up their operating costs to hide it. Those kinds of things we could look at, and class action plaintiffs could look at as well. So it's not a perfect solution. It's certainly not a guarantee that the savings will be passed on, but it seemed like at least something that would put pressure on retail gasoline station owners to pass some of these savings on. And absent the implementation of an audit program or inspection teams or criminalizing that kind of conduct, this seemed to be at least one option for the committee to consider, and that's, I think, all we're trying to do with this amendment is just come up with some options and have the committee consider them. But I'm certainly happy to answer any questions the committee has about that.
Follow up on that point.
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just on those 2 points. Again, my first impression when I seen this, or this is not a new amendment. This is something that's been, I think, passed around to all his committee members, already seen this, at least lines 2 and 3. I thought, now that's something that a politician would really want to do, to thump their chest and say, look what I did to the public, you know, to show what they've done. But trying to get down to the meat of how we can do this, and the discussion that I had quite some length with Ms. Bales earlier, without having this, without the state having to go into every gas station's books, because that's something I do not want to do. But if gas stations make quarterly reports on income, Ms. Bales, I believe you stated that the state would be able to go back and verify that that was passed on, because originally, you know, this 8 cents comes from the distributor. That's where it's collected. But you might be able to go back and check that. And you, I believe the discussion that we had, you said that you didn't feel that that would be a great burden on the department to do that. Is that correct?
Representative Newman, through the chair. Yeah, during our initial discussion when we talked about it, you know, I thought maybe, provided that retailers use a standard markup on their fuel, but after our discussion, I discovered that that isn't necessarily the case. So the concern that I have here, and actually it would be significantly burdensome, and we would have to look at a lot of books and records of entities that are not taxpayers. They are not qualified dealers. They do not remit the tax to us. Only the qualified dealers are licensed and then pay tax, but the retail stations are not. So at this point in time, they have no record-keeping requirement or reports that they have to file with the Department of Revenue. So in order to make that work, they would be subject to that. And then in order for us to determine if they've actually passed that on, we would have to be able to develop an idea of what their standard markup is on fuel that they've purchased, and then take a look at what their normal markup has been over a period of time. And then if they took the cost of their fuel and changed their markup, we would have to then make the assumption that by changing that markup, they indeed passed that tax on to the consumer. But even that would be difficult. And I did have discussions with Department of Law after you and I talked. And this is, you know, the things that we discussed and our concerns is prices can be marked up for several things. I mean, maybe they had increased. I mean, they're also feeling the pinch of fuel costs themselves just to even run their retail outlet. So maybe they've increased their markup for things like that or other costs that have gone up with the other goods that they sell. I don't know. So to be honest with you, I think it would be more burdensome than I originally thought.
Okay. Thanks, Ms. Bales. And then I guess just along with the fiscal note, then we'll receive how the state would do this as a state employee. You're going to have to put these on as a state employee. You're going to have to verify they're on, along with the cost of the sticker, and I guess that's yet to come. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Well, thanks again, Ms. Bales and Mr. Sneffen. We have one other person off-net that would like to testify, and I believe that we have all received her written testimony. It's Deborah Williams. Are you still with us, Deborah?
Yes, thank you very much, Chairman and committee members. I greatly appreciate the opportunity to speak with you today. I thank you for holding this hearing on this important issue. You have received our testimony, and I will just quickly highlight the 6 points that we made, which are indeed the 6 reasons not to suspend the motor fuel tax at this time. The first one, obviously, has been the subject of much of your discussion so far in this hearing, and that we believe that, based on economic theory and experience, that the fuel tax suspension may not and probably will not result in lowering the price of motor fuel to the full extent of the suspension. And clearly, the purpose of taking this action and depriving the state treasury of approximately $40 million is to pass on these savings to consumers. But I do not believe that it makes sense to suspend the fuel taxes in Alaska and deprive the state treasury of this money unless we can demonstrate that all or most of the benefit of this will pass on to consumers, and I do not think that we have that evidence. As the committee members know, there was discussion this summer at the federal level about suspending motor fuel tax. Of course, several candidates for the presidency proposed that, and it was uniformly criticized and denounced by economists, including Nobel Prize-winning economists like Joseph Stiglitz, who believe that that kind of suspension of motor fuel tax would not be transferred to the consumers, but rather held by either the retailers and or the wholesalers and or the oil companies themselves. So there was a lot of discussion about this at the federal level. There's been discussion about this at the state level. And generally, this approach is rejected because it cannot be demonstrated that the benefits will be passed on to the consumer. The second point that we make in the written testimony, of course, is when you actually compare motor fuel taxes with taxes that consumers pay at the pump, you'll see there is no apparent correlation between the amount of motor fuel taxes that are imposed by the state and the prices that people pay. There are so many factors, of course, in governing how much retail prices are, including competition. But just for example, Seattle pays less at the pump than we do, but the state has a motor fuel tax there of 37.5 cents. Alaska does, of course, now have the largest price for motor fuel in the nation. The third point we make is that if the legislature chooses to suspend the motor fuel tax, it will be very difficult, if not impossible, to reimpose it in the future, especially if oil prices remain high, which of course most economists and others are predicting that they will. And so this is not a one-year solution or a one-year approach. I think we all understand that when you eliminate or suspend a tax, it is incredibly politically hard to reimpose it, particularly if conditions have not changed or have worsened. The fourth issue is that, in general, I think all of us believe and understand that cost causers should be cost payers, and the people that do drive or use motor fuel for other purposes are the ones that are in large part imposing costs on our highways and other transportation infrastructure. And just a fundamental principle of government is that cost causers should contribute to the payment. Our transportation infrastructure does cost the state a substantial amount of money, and it does seem fairest to have the users of that system bear a proportion of those costs. The fifth point is, as we all know, we have visitors in this state, both business and recreational visitors, people who rent cars and purchase gas associated with their rental cars, and people who drive here or come here recreationally. So out-of-state individuals help pay for this motor fuel tax. Unfortunately, we'll be candid, we tried, but we're not able to get an estimate of how much outsiders pay of our fuel tax. We did make several calls, but that information was not available. But I think we all know that we do have a lot of substantial business and recreational visitors here. And so, you know, not insignificant part of that tax is paid by out-of-staters, which contributes to the state treasury without burdening, of course, individuals in the state. We would lose that out-of-state contribution to our state treasury if we eliminate this tax. And the sixth point is that the goal, ultimately, you know, the old saying, if you give someone a fish, you feed them for a day. If you teach them how to fish, they can feed themselves for a lifetime. You know, the ultimate goal here is to have our legislature prudently help Alaskans reduce their costs associated with fuel by reducing consumption through energy efficiency and energy conservation. That will be the long-term remedy to what we know are long-term projections for very high oil prices. And so if the legislature can look at investing this $40 million in ways that will allow people to reduce their energy usage, that will bear benefits for years and years and years to come. And so we would urge this committee and the state legislature as a whole to first and foremost look at those possibilities, especially given point number one that has been discussed so well so far. We do not know that this suspension will benefit consumers, but we do know that if we do such things as providing loans for marine engine efficiency conversion, expanding the use of biofuels, especially from fish waste, providing additional money for carpooling, vanpooling, and so forth, that those will benefit individuals, bring down their price of energy and fuel costs for you know, not only the short term, but midterm and long term. So we would urge the legislature to take that approach instead of this very questionable approach that is rife with problems. Thank you so very much.
Well, Ms. Williams, I can address one of your concerns. There's an automatic repeal provision of the suspension in 1 year in Section 2. So I hope that helps at least one of your concerns. Are there any questions for Ms. Williams? Thanks again, Ms. Williams.
Thank you so much.
Is there anybody else online that would care to testify? Hearing none. Anybody in the room? With that, we'll close public testimony and bring it back to Representative Gatto, who has been sitting here patiently with the question.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I was just running some numbers here. If you have a car that gets 20 miles per gallon and you run it 15,000 miles a year, that's 750 gallons, and your tax reduction is 8 cents. 8 cents on 750 gallons is, I don't know, you're going to save about $55 a year on that car. So it's not a substantial amount of savings to an individual, but it's something, especially to people that commute, who are the people that maybe take the biggest beating on that.
It's $1.20 a week.
The question I had to do with posting the sign on the pump. That may prove difficult or awkward, and yet we only want a sign to be where a person can read it. Is it within the realm of reason to post a sign, A, where a person can easily read it, or B, on or adjacent to a pump or something like that? And that's in this amendment, or it may be in the bill. I'm not sure. I see it in the amendment. Failing to post a sign on a pump, notifying the consumer that the motor fuel tax has been suspended. I'm not sure we want to do that. I guess that's my question is for the committee. How intense do we want to be about the sign on the pump?
I believe we already have notices placed on all the pumps. I think it's the last time that, but each year I believe they post a sticker saying when the pump was tested for the accuracy of the measuring device. Being done.
This is a specific size sign, that not a sticker or something, but with actual dimensions.
48 inches. Randy?
Mr. Chairman, I think you're correct that the weights and measures sticker is smaller than the sign that's proposed in the bill. But the pumps are, I think each individual pump has to have a notice on it that it complies with the state's requirements for dispensing the fuel, that it's accurate.
If I may, I agree. I'm just a little concerned that a person has a way to indicate how much the motor fuel tax is zero. But if the existing sign is this big and the requirement is this big, then they have to put two signs.
Through the chair, that's correct. They would have, could have them side by side, or
half a sign, so that the two of them together equal.
I'd like the record to reflect we've been joined by Representative Rammers, who also has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I might suggest to Representative Gatto that it could be the same size as the little sign in the car saying it's from Canada, or the big sign from the car. Remember when we had that bill before us from Representative Guerra's bill, wasn't that the issue that we took up on?
I think that was an issue on the documentation fee.
Yes, on doc fees, and there were two signs. There was a small sign and a bigger sign.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think if I had to make a comment on this, and then when the appropriate time comes around, maybe we can get to it. But as far as I'm concerned, I wouldn't be afraid to offer an amendment to this amendment that says that we don't have to put a sign on this. I think the people are going to know that there's an 8 cents that's been imposed. I don't think we need to have a larger fiscal note. I don't think we have to make sure we have people go around and make sure there's a sign. There's a lot of remote airports. There's a lot of gas pumps in this state. You know, I think that the word will get out, that people will know that. And if I had my way, I think I would delete lines 2 and 3 on the amendment.
To the chair, Representative Newman, that would be fine. And I have spoken to one larger retailer about the issue, and he said his company would be passing on savings because of the, and he's in an urban market in Anchorage, but he said it's competitive enough that he would definitely do that.
Representative Gardner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have two different issues I'd like to talk about a little bit. First of all, going back to my very first question, which is on the letter of July 21st from Randy Ruaro, and I asked about the large processor vessels that would save roughly $25,000, and we don't know how many of them are Alaska-owned. I don't know. I don't know how many there are in the state or how many are Alaskan, but if each one's saving $25,000, that's a significant amount. And then I refer to the letter in our packet from, it's actually a newsletter from Senator Lisa Murkowski, and she's working on a tax rebate for or tax exemption tax allowances for Alaskan fishermen on their fuel costs. And in her letter, she says fish prices, in most cases, are set by the seafood processing sector and are tied to prices in the global seafood food market. That suggests that there's not a lot of fluctuation based on local costs. You know, there's a global price, and they're going to pay X amount for salmon, and that's pretty much what they're going to do, is what that's saying to me. And it doesn't matter what the costs are for our fishermen, that the processor prices are set somewhere else. So I'm really dubious that the $25,000 savings of these seafood processing vessels that may or may not be Alaskans are going to be passed along to fishermen. So that's a concern of mine. The second issue I want to talk about, and if you want to respond to that, I can hold off.
Sure. If I could just quickly, through the chair, Representative Gardner, I think the statement in Senator Murkowski's press release that you referenced is speaking about the seafood retail price that the processor charges on the open market. I was, in my earlier comments, I was speaking more to the wholesale price, I guess, that the processors pay the fishermen, which is subject to a kind of a bargaining process often, where they negotiate a price for the wholesale level fish. So my comment was that if those collective groups of fishermen know that the processors are getting a break on their fuel prices, they'll know that there's some cushion there to ask for or to negotiate for when they're negotiating for their wholesale price.
Thank you. And through the chair, if this legislation should pass, I hope you're right. I don't have a lot of confidence in that assessment. My other concern is about the reports that are mentioned in the bill itself, and specifically, say, lines 11, 12, and 13, starting with sales invoices must be attached to the monthly report supporting all sales and transfers of gasoline, diesel, and aviation fuel. I guess I should back up a little bit. This refers to the people who are already subject, dealers, to filing reports. But the current reports are on a monthly basis. They have to submit the tax collected and file a report that just says what their total sales are, and they can deduct a little bit for their handling costs. The reports that would be required under this bill would also have to include all the reporting, all the supporting documentation, all the sales. The report is due. What does it say? Invoices must be attached to the report supporting all sales and transfers of gasoline. And I'm thinking of the slew of little gas stations all around this state. And do I understand correctly that the new report would say they have to have supporting documents for all the gasoline sales?
To the chair, Representative Gardner, if Ms. Bales is on hand from Revenue, she could answer that question best.
Okay, thank you. And before that, Mr. Chair, I'd just like to say that, point out that there's a $5,000 penalty assessed against any person who fails to provide the monthly report or provide the supporting invoices. And that seems to me pretty draconian for the host of mom and pop, you know, small service stations where they're not bookkeepers.
I believe that's the same amount that's on mattresses if you take off the tag.
Exactly.
Each day, each pump.
So if I may, Mr. Chairman, this is Joanna Bales with Department of Revenue. May I answer Representative Gardner's question?
Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, Representative Gardner through the chair.
Thank you.
Our dealers are made up of wholesalers and large distributors. We have about 100 qualified dealers in the state. Those are the businesses that would have to report. They currently report quite a bit of information right now. They don't attach their invoices. The reason we want to see the invoices is to ensure that they've not included the tax when they've sold to the retailers. All the small mom-and-pop retailers in the state are not subject to this reporting requirement because they are not dealers under the statutory definition of a qualified motor fuel dealer in the state. So, it wouldn't affect those businesses at all. And the $5,000 penalty, it says we may assess up to that. And so it wouldn't more than likely be an initial hit, but if we did have someone that failed to continually report, then they could be subject to that. And, of course, we would have to draft regulations to clarify, you know, what would constitute the maximum penalty allowed.
Thank you. So I don't know much about this industry, but if I'm a service station owner and I buy fuel from the dealer, do I get to set my price myself, or does the dealer tell me what I have to sell it for?
Representative Gardner, through the chair, you as the independent retailer get to set your own price.
Thank you. So for the state to know whether or not the consumer is getting that 8 cents a gallon rebate, the person, the dealer who sells it to me, wouldn't know necessarily whether I'm deducting that amount when I set my price or not. I mean, I still could be. Our consumers have no way of knowing, and the state wouldn't know if the price at the pump has gone down as a result of this legislation.
Representative Gardner, through the chair, yeah, I believe your assumption is that would be correct.
So the reports we're requiring don't really give us the information we need.
Those, Representative Gardner, through the chair, those reports allow us to meet our federal highway requirement to ensure that our federal highway funds continue to come to the state during a period of suspension. And then also as a second, though, it does ensure that the dealers haven't charged the retailers that tax.
Thank you. But the next step of what the retailer does for the customer is unknown to the state in any formal kind of way.
Representative Gardner, through the chair, that's correct.
Thank you.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that with the $5,000 fine up to $5,000, the state, whether there's a sign there or not, has no way of knowing whether it's there or not. I don't know if this is a proper time, but I'd like to make offer an amendment to the amendment to delete lines 2 through 10, a conceptual amendment.
Actually, I think it's perfect time because we have the amendment before us.
We don't. And that kind of gets through that. We can't do it. I think it adds a whole lot more bureaucracy to the whole deal, let alone the fiscal note involved with it. I think that people will know that it's there. So, again, delete lines, conceptual amendment, delete lines 2 through 10, page 1.
Is there any opposition to deleting lines 2 through 10? Seeing none, we'll go to the amendment. Is there any opposition to amendment number 1?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Leave for the amendment.
Chair to address it?
Yes. The bill doesn't require that the person selling the fuel pass the tax along. Am I correct in that?
I would agree to that, but I'll defer to Randy.
The bill doesn't guarantee that the tax will be passed on. The only guarantee is if we don't suspend the tax, Alaskans will keep paying it.
I understand. Thank you. Okay, so on this amendment, amendment number 1, on page 2, item number 3 on line 5 says this sign would state, sign at the pump, state that the price for the motor fuel on the pump reflects the elimination of the tax during the period of suspension. So if a retailer does not want to give his or her customers the benefit of that 8 cent a gallon tax suspension, they're still required to excuse me, just a second. I'm just a little. We've eliminated the sign in our First Amendment.
We did it conceptually, so.
Okay, so this paragraph then is gone anyway. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Excuse me. I'll remove my objection then.
Yeah, the conceptual amendment was to delete all references to the signage.
Correct.
So that would bring back to us what's left of the amendment. Representative Gatto.
Mr. Chair, just to be sure, deleting lines 1 through 10 still leave on page 2 references to 2 through 10, leaving references to the fine. And we don't need a fine anymore. So that was a conceptual amendment. I would only assume then conceptually it would include the language on page 2 relative to the fine imposed for not doing something that you don't have to do.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I'd like to call for the vote.
Bettless.
On the amendment. If there is still an objection.
I remove my objection.
So, seeing no objection, the amendment passes. Repeat.
Mr. Chair, I make a motion to remove my...
Or rescind the...
To rescind our last action.
Is there any opposition? Now, you're probably wondering why. We have an amendment that changes the effective date clause, which is all that's left of
okay.
This amendment.
Was Mr. Bullock very quick on the draw here?
I think for purposes of discussion, we'll call this amendment number two.
Okay.
Chair, I move amendment number two.
Seeing no opposition, amendment number two passes. That brings back for us the bill.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill number 4004, version 25GH4060/A from committee with attached fiscal notes and as amended.
Object.
For discussion or for objection?
No, I don't like
the call. Please call the roll.
Representative Gatto?
Yes.
Representative Voodoo?
Absent.
Representative Ramirez? Representative Book?
No.
Representative Gardner?
No.
Representative Newman?
Yes.
Chairman Olson?
Yes.
Representative Ramirez?
Swing.
Holy smokes.
Swing.
Gonna reduce taxes?
Yes.
With that, the bill moves on to the Finance Committee. Nobody leave the room, and we're adjourned.